Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Carulla. We're here with a very talented artist. We're back in the studio again. Ladies and gentlemen, Ludo Luiz. Hello, how are you? I know I mispronounced it because it's the S is silent, right?
Yes, Ludo but you said it right. I appreciate that. How are you, my brother?
Dude, it is so good to see you. You have been touring the world, playing with so many people. You played on my record too.
Yeah.
And then it all comes back down to you putting out your own record, which you've done. And man, I've listened to a couple tracks and it is unbelievable.
Oh, so thank you.
First of all, we're going to go way back because I want a little backstory. Uh-huh. That I read your bio too. I'm like, oh man, I'm so excited. I've been wanting to get you on this show for years. So this is amazing. But what was the moment of Zen that made you want to play music?
I think when I was a kid. Like, I come from my grandfather from my mom's side was a violinist. My dad loved music. He's like a fanatic of jazz, Latin music, soul funk. So basically, since a kid at home, we had every Sunday the vinyl on. Every time, so it was like, oh, I'm gonna grab this, put the vinyl on, like the whole school stuff, and I was keep looking at them, and I was like, oh man, that's dope. So far as I remember, when I was maybe two, something like that, I had a picture of me on the piano home, and I'm playing with my pajamas, blue pajamas, playing like that, and that's how it started. And since then, I love music and I love
and when trumpet. Did you start playing trumpet?
8 years old. I was doing piano at five. But I feel like I was bored with it. Like, my teacher, she was like classical. Oh, you have to do this, all the scales and stuff. And blah, 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 blah. So I was like, cool, yeah, it's fun. But at some point, my very first teacher, Alain Loisel, was my jazz teacher, actually. I saw him play, like, instrument presentation, like, today we're going to have, like, the drums, the guitar. And he come play trumpet, and I really fell in love with the instrument. I was like, wow. Oh, my God. So that's how it started, basically. So I went home, and I said to my parents, like, I think I want to switch. I love this guy. I love the instrument he was playing. My parents were like, are you sure? Yeah, yeah. So
they're like, it's going to be loud.
They went to buy me my very first trumpet, which was a pocket trumpet. And that's how it started.
That's amazing. And do you remember, like, did you start with scales? Did you learn, like, marching band tunes?
No,
like
the first stuff was the buzz. He really insisted on you need to buzz with the mouthpiece. That's how it started. And after, he wrote on the piece of paper, hold the finger in. So that's how I started learning.
Wow.
Like, so solfège, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si, do. Yep. You know, yep. I was like, oh, okay. Right, I get it. Explain me how to play. That's basically.
And were you listening to jazz that early or not yet?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Miles Davis.
What?
My guy.
Dude, I met him.
Oh, God.
Man, I met him. You know what's crazy? I was a kid and I was singing backup at the Grammys. This is 1990. And he came out and rehearsed at Shrine Auditorium. I'm sitting there as a kid, empty auditorium, and he's just rehearsing because they're setting up sound and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, man, that guy someday is going to be so big, not knowing that he was a legend 40 or 50 years before. And then I walked backstage to get back to our dressing room, and I bumped into him. And I was like, oh, sorry, man. He was like, that's okay, man. That's okay. Yeah, and I was just like, that guy's cool as shit. So, man, that was my short little moment with him. But that was the only time I met him. I never saw him play outside of that. It was so Miles Davis, you were listening to Kind of Blue, Bitches Brew.
Yeah, Miles. Kind of Blue, Amandla, Tutu.
Amazing.
And actually, today's the anniversary of his death, 30 years ago.
Wow. What?
Yes, exactly.
That's crazy. Yes, perfect to have you on then, man.
And yes, he really was one of my first influence I got for I talk for trumpet.
Right.
Because, I was watching VHS and videos on at home I remember my dad, loved jazz, recording every
live show.
On tapes. So he put it on the TV, and I watched it, and I was really impressed by him. Like, the way he was so cool on stage, the way he played, few notes there,
get back, space.
And I was like, wow. For me, it was like the very first rock star I've seen on TV.
I still
beside
think
of
he is.
Michael Jackson. And,
right.
But I was like, oh my God.
And he had the big sunglasses.
Yes, the leather jacket with the red.
He just looked cool all the time.
He looked really cool in play. And I was like, he just blew me out. I was like, that's the guy. Lots of Latin music too, because my background from Caribbean, Martinique. So we listened to lots of salsa, merengue, zouk music too from my roots. So. Yeah, as far as I really remember, music all the time, every single
day. And when you learning horn lines and at school or anything like that, what made you kind of gravitate to that part of it?
I love Phil Collins' horn section, Earth, Wind & Fire first.
Yes.
That's for me. Earth, Wind & Fire.
What about Tower of Power?
Tower of Power. But I remember I was doing all the writing, trying to transcribe everything they were playing. I mean, all the Earth, Wind & Fire song, some of them, lots of Phil Collins and the Vine Street Horn, back then the Phoenix Horns.
Yep.
So writing all of that, and I just tried to play along with the cassette.
So that's not easy, dude.
But just rewind. Try to play. Yeah, exactly. And that's mostly what I did, transcribing. And my teacher also really tried to make me understand different type of, listen to Lee Morgan, listen to Mice, listen to Freddie Hubbard,
Freddie Hubbard's one of my favorites.
The difference that those guys playing, and also piano players. So I really try to make my own, put everything in the pot, do my own cooking, and just
What about saxophone, trombone? Were you kind of gravitating towards some of those arrangements too, or not as much?
Those mostly, I like the sound of horn section. That's the way it was written, the trumpet, the sax, and the bone. Sometimes two trumpets, one sax, and bone. And I really love the color it had.
Yeah.
And it is. I mean, still.
All the harmony.
And all the harmony. And yes. Saxophone. Also, Stan Getz, Coltrane. Yeah, for sure. All the legends. So.
Right. Well, it's interesting because I always wonder what horn players are influenced by. Sometimes people will say singers. Sometimes it's other horn players. Sometimes it's different horns of what they listen to. And, you definitely have a wide spectrum of what you're listening to just from where you come from.
Mm-hmm.
And let's make a little shout out to, you grew up with some pretty heavy trumpet players. You played with Rashawn Ross. There was a breed of trumpet players coming from where you were kind of, where you grew up. But you were also listening to so many different styles.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the great things about your playing, and everybody says this, you can hit very, very high notes, more than most trumpet players. Your phrasing is impeccable. You make music all the time when you play, whether you're soloing, whether you're knowing how to blend. I saw you the first time playing with the Meters, and you were slaying it. And I was like, a great player knows how to be an ensemble player and a lead. And you know how to do both.
Oh, thank you.
And I was watching you, and I was like, man, he's blending so well. And I've seen it when you played with us, too. What are the different ways that you listen when you're playing?
I mean, I try to serve the music first. And again, if I get asked to do solos, I will put myself in the shoes of, okay, I need to solo and be in front.
Right.
But when I'm in a section, I really try to listen to both of the guys, or maybe if we're more like everybody in the section, it try to blend with everybody. It's not like...
But you do it live, too. That's
yes,
not easy.
You can't... I mean, I feel like you can't be like top, and it's just like you there and everybody in the back. It doesn't match. You need to blend with everybody, and... Unless the written is like, okay, you need to be there. You need to be there and do the stuff. So,
but it's interesting because when I've seen you in horn sections, everybody's like, hey, Luda, do you want to play the high note? Do you ever get tired of playing the high notes?
Yes. it's funny. It's not my favorite stuff because right. I really like to be like, yeah, in the mix with everybody. So, but if they ask me to do that.
But I notice a lot of people can't do that. That's why they're like, hey, Ludo, play that super, super high note.
No, Russian can do that really, really well.
Both of you. I think it would be amazing to see a battle between both of you doing solos where you're just seeing who can hit those top notes. Because it's just, I mean, those, what I notice about both of you as players, it's like, you're fierce on solos, but when you kind of are musical and dynamic, you see the difference of when you're playing super like in the pocket and dynamic and kind of doing something to create a vibe, and then when you're firing on all four cylinders with these high notes. And there's an intensity on the slow, mellower side of when you're kind of creating a dynamic vibe, but when you hit those high notes, it's literally like sound the trumpets, man, because it's so big and it's such a beautiful tone. And I think it's not easy. Not a lot of people understand getting that tone is not easy.
It's the perfect
like breath control, embouchure, all of it. And man, your tone every time.
You know about trumpet, right?
Yeah, dude, it's not. That's what I'm saying. It's like you're working your lips more than most instruments. And to get the air support and to do that, I mean, night after night, it's not easy. So, first of all, I commend you. Now, when you're coming up with your own music, you've toured with Lenny Kravitz. Let's talk a little bit about that for a second. So, you toured with Lenny for 10 years. You've played with all these pop stars, Demi Lovato, you name it, Camila Cabello. How does it change when you play with all these different artists, music to music? Do you kind of approach it the same, or is it like you're approaching it in a different way, song to song, artist to artist, depending on what it is?
It depends because for some artists, it's just like, you know, when you do one hit or stuff like that, you just have most of the time blend with everybody else.
Right.
It's not like you playing, like, again, when I was saying, like, you're in the front and you play because the artist demand that you be at this time the center, and you have to deliver some solos and stuff like that. But most of the time, when you have to play with section, you just have to blend with the people you have around you and to make a sound. That's the way I see it. Like, for example, Lenny, when I was, most of the show is like horn section. So you have to blend with...
And you're
with,
playing with heavy cats. Harold Todd.
Yes.
I mean, you're...
Like Michael Sherman, yes, Gabriel McNair.
Yes, yes.
So you have to blend with your friend on stage. And when he asks you to get out of the section and play a solo, yeah, you have to... Okay, that's my moment. I take it. And after that, you have to get back to play with my friends and blend with them and try to make the most sound of it. Same for other artists I play with. It's the same. You have to blend with everybody around you, and you can't be like, "Oh yeah, I'm gonna, you know, be in the front." No, it doesn't work like that.
Well, it's interesting though because I've seen you play with so many different bands and artists, but when I saw you play with Lenny, I mean, he really lets you play. Like, that's what I love when you see a band or an artist let his horn players play solo, and he opened the show that I saw at the Palladium where you're on top of the stage blowing a solo, and it was amazing. I was like, dude, this is so off the chain because you're in your element. you're making music, you're playing these crazy good solos, and he's giving you this showcase. How did that kind of like come to be a part of the show? Was it his, was it his idea? Was it kind of like a collaborative thing when he just heard everybody playing?
It was mostly rehearsal that we decide. He decide
right.
what he wants to do. And mostly it came from jamming.
Right.
Because he loved playing with his musicians. So we mostly jamming, and because that part gonna fit in what I'm thinking, okay, we're gonna include it in the show. So
awesome.
Maybe extending the song, and okay, that's the moment you're gonna play and do your solo, or that's most of the time that's how it is. Like, okay, right. That's okay, the jam. Oh, I like that. So we're gonna include this in the song. And
you have to love that, because it's like an artist taking the jazz concept and putting it in a rock show. You
yep.
know what I mean? So I'm sure it was just off the chain. So now let's talk about you making your own music. Mm-hmm. This is why you're here. I mean, it's great you play with all these people, but your record is ridiculous.
I appreciate
so now
that.
You're off the road, and now you want to make a record. What are you thinking as far as artistic statement, sound of the songs, writing the songs? What's your approach with all of it?
Mostly it was, okay, what are my influences? What music drags me? Like,
right.
What I feel, how I am at the moment I want to write the song, and it's mostly I want to have fun, and I want the people to listen, who's going to listen to my music, had fun and want to dance and want to
right.
have fun. So that's how I try to make it work, and it took me I would say like 10 years to get
wow.
this one done. Because I was never satisfied. I was always finding like, this part is, I'm not sure.
Well, there's so many different styles too. You have like straight ahead, you got New Orleans, you got all these different flavors. That's what I love about the record.
Yes, and so that's mostly all the influences I had. Like for the first song and the intro, outro, Madinina is like a little homage to my island Martinique. So it's like Caribbean grooves in it. Some of the songs are more like pop, as you said, more rock, and basically that's all those style I loved
right.
since a kid. I've been listening to, as I said, different style, and that's what I wanted to have in my first album, because all of this is who I am right now.
And do you start with like the head? Do you start with chords? Like, how do you approach the writing part?
In a funny way, mostly it happened when I'm under my shower.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Like I'm in the shower and I'm just like singing stuff. I was like, oh, okay, cool. So I went in the keyboard, start putting like the chord, what I'm hearing, or sometimes it's reverse. I heard a melody. Okay, I had the melody. So okay, what's the chord gonna work for that?
So you're doing changes and you're thinking,
yeah.
Man, see, I'm blown away, because it's like I'll mess with chords, but with jazz players, they have this vocabulary on piano. Even if you're not a pianist and you're a horn player or a drummer or a bassist, they sit at a piano and play changes in such a unique way that I would never approach the piano
yeah,
and say,
but
I love that.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not like, yeah,
yeah,
okay,
no, but,
you know,
but still,
but I just like try
but
to
you are enough.
Out.
You are enough to know how
yeah.
the chords relate to each other, and that's enough. You know what I
yes,
mean?
Yes, and sometimes you say, okay, these two changes, no, it doesn't work. So maybe, oh yeah, that's work better, and try to
that's amazing.
Try to yeah to make it work. And if I had doubt, call friends and say, yeah, do you think that's oh no, you should do this? Okay, cool, and I try. So, okay, this is better, and yeah, that's the way I do it. Sometimes it came from the changes. Sometimes it's coming from the melody. It really depends.
Well, let's play something, and then we'll talk more about the record. What do you want to play first?
I hope to you. Which one you prefer?
I'm going to let's play Rebirth, because
cool.
I love, well, we were talking about the New Orleans thing. I want to play that. Here's Rebirth, Ludo Ludovic, Ludo Louis. Here it comes. Oh, yeah. The studio audience loves it, man. Dude, first, let's talk about these horn lines. Very Earth, Wind, and Fire.
Mm-hmm.
Just, it's got a little bit of, like, funk. It's got a little bit of smooth jazz. It's got a little bit of, like on the, like, level, straight ahead. It has all the ingredients of everything that's good. How did it come about? Like, how did you choose the players? Did all the players play on every song? Did you have a band? You were talking in the elevator. You said half of it was recorded in Paris, half of it was in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about who played on the record and how it all came about.
It's friendship. I really believe in friendship. And because it's my first, I really wanted to have all my friends in it. I wasn't able to have all my friends.
Yeah, of course.
But I have some of them. And I'm glad to have them on this record. So
wait, why is this your first record? First of all,
because it took time.
I was too busy doing tours.
No, it's not that. It's like you know, you come back home from the road, just like, I want to do some stuff. I'm gonna work later on the album. And it's not a bad thing, but
right.
I really think that was the right timing to do it because. Right. I was like, okay, I need to put my fear aside and just go for it. And I think why I haven't done it before is because I was kind of scared to, okay, put my music out, basically put myself out and be naked.
Right.
So that's why it took so long.
But isn't it gratifying when it's like when you're in the process and you're seeing things getting done? That's the best.
Yeah, but,
it's the best fucking feeling.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, with me, it's like, even like the last, I think when I was going back and forth with my engineer, Scott Campbell, sent me the tracks and the mix. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not sure about that.
Yep.
And back and forth. That's what I say, dude, stop it. It's good. You need to let it go. So I was like, okay, cool. But so because I was really afraid about that.
Right.
Afraid about putting
my music
out.
That's every record.
Exactly.
I'm going to give you the best advice that an old engineer who I still work with gave me. He said, there's 20 different ways to make a song 98% right.
Mm.
There's no such thing as perfect.
Mm.
So as soon as you let go of the perfect thing, just get it to 98%. When you get chills, mm-hmm. that's when you know it's right.
And I agree with you. And on top of that, to get back to the musicians, everybody play the game and they give their best for me.
Yeah,
which I really appreciate. So I need to name them because
yeah,
it's
please,
important.
Let's do it.
So I got my friend in France who did it, like Vincent Bidal on the keyboard, Romain Joutard on the drums, Aile Dasta on the guitar, Henri Dorina on the bass. After that, I have all my friends in LA, Camille Rustam on the guitar, Nissan Stewart on drums, Brandon Brown on the bass.
Dude. All heavy cats.
Michael Fishering on the guitar, George Lax on the organ, Ricky Pajot on the keys, Desi DeLauro on the vocals, Jacob Sisney on the sax, Gordon Campbell on the drums, JJ Smith on the bass, Lassim Richards on the trombone, and
amazing.
I don't want to miss anybody, so yes, I think that's about it.
And he apologizes if he does miss anybody.
Yeah, I apologize.
That's a lot of people to remember.
Yeah.
But did you record everything live, all together in a room? Did you overdub stuff? Like, what was your approach?
Most of it was live because
wow.
I really wanted to get the sound and everybody in the same room. For example, the song Everybody that I recorded at Gordon Campbell Studio was everybody was in this control room. Like, so Ricky was on the keys, JJ on the bass there, Camille was doing guitar. And after that, oh, I forget. My brother Roland Garcia Gahate on the percussion. Sorry, Rolo. And so everybody was in the same room, and I really wanted to get this vibe, this
vibe,
sound,
yeah.
And because yeah, I feel like when everybody's in the same place, you get the vibe. You and yeah, we can
well,
be
you
together.
Also have players too that are capable.
Yes.
To like do one take and it's right. Did you have to rehearse them for a little bit? Did you?
No.
You just wrote charts.
I wrote the charts, what? Give it to them, and I had some.
That's crazy.
I had some reference from like for the recording in Paris. I had the chance. I was lucky enough to have two shows before, and because of the two shows, I was like, okay, we need to go in the studio. So. Over the weekend, I booked the studio on the Monday, so everybody was like free. So we went, and because it was fresh, it was easy to record. Same in LA. I had some recording for clubs, so I gave everybody the charts and some ideas of what I wanted. And after that, we just like everybody, and I really let everybody be themselves.
Right.
So if you think what is written is not appropriate. Do you? I just want you to be there because
that's awesome.
It's you. So bring me what you want to bring this in this project. So basically, I let everybody do what they want to do with direction for sure. But I just want them to be themselves.
Well, it's also amazing because the group of musicians you have, they're so great at what they do
mm-hmm.
that when you put them all in a room, everybody's feeding off each other and trying to feel like a cool vibe. To be themselves. So it's like you already disarm people with just like bringing these great players together that all know each other and have played with each other, and also you allow them the gift to just play what they want to play instead of a usual session where it's like they're playing a small little blurb or like they're playing what they're told. So that's what makes it so creative, and you capture that. Did you do multiple takes or did you just do like one or two takes?
We did most of them like was like two takes.
Wow, that's
two
great.
Takes. There is a song like again, that's why I'm lucky to have those guys with me. There is a song we started tracking, and I was in the control room and I wasn't sure about that. So I was like middle of the song, I stopped to say, I think we should maybe look less to the charts. And just like feel it.
Yep.
And the take after was the take. And we did another one for safety, but that was the take. So
that's
after
awesome.
That, when we have to do overdubs for Jacob on sax and myself for a trumpet, we had the material. And sometimes I was playing with them just to get the feeling.
Right.
But most of it was like, yeah, I think I got it. I don't need to do three, four times. I think we got it.
Slamming. Let's play Everybody, and then I got a couple other questions.
Cool.
All right, here's Everybody, Ludo Ludovic. Ludo Louis. I have it written here wrong, but Ludo Louis, Everybody. Here it is. was that fine fellow talking towards the end of the track?
That's my friend Joey. Joey Omicia, sax player. Actually, he played with Roy too. So
wow.
Yeah. We met a couple of years ago when we were doing a Netflix TV show. That's how we met and how we became friends.
What Netflix TV show?
It's called The Eddie.
I don't know.
Directed by Damien Chazelle.
Okay.
And that was pretty dope. It was a story of a jazz band in the club in Paris, and that was a really, really
fun. I need to see this. I know he was a jazz drummer.
Yes.
And he went to music school. I saw him at Sundance, and he told the whole story of how he was way into jazz, and that's what made him want to do that for so long. And then now this is a storytelling.
Yes.
Know?
Yeah. Yes. So that's how I met Joey, and we became friends. And I say, that was during the shooting of the TV show that I asked him, "Hey, can you come to the studio? I have an idea. Can you do some MC at the end?" Said, "Oh yeah, I got you. One take." And he was out. I was like,
"That's it."
I was like, I think I got it. And he was like, "I think I can do more, bro. I think I can do more." I said, "No, I think I have what I need." So
wasn't it amazing too? It's like, there's so many things that happen that you have no control over, that once you see them come to fruition and fall into place, it's like, I think the magic of making records.
Yes.
It's like, you have an idea or a plan, but when you start seeing it taking shape and becoming something, and then, you know, getting the album work, and then that's the part I hate, is doing all the album layout, all that. I hate that stuff.
Yes,
but
I know.
When you see the songs coming together and the recordings and the mixes and the mastering, and then you finally distance yourself from it, and you're like, it's done.
Mm-hmm.
That is the greatest feeling.
Yes, especially when you receive the first one, and you see when you have all the songs in order, you listen to the track to make sure everything is right. It's the first feeling for me. I was like, kind of, oh wow, okay, that's the first step, and after that, as you said, all the layout, the design, the album cover and everything. And when you get that too, just like, and I would like to thank Mathieu Bitton, who did a great, great job for the album cover. And my friend also, Karen Strauss, who did the music video directed the music video for Missing You. But yes, it's when everything's coming,
it's
wow.
It's amazing when it comes together.
It's happening. It's happening.
Now, I have to ask you a question, because this is a funny question for me to ask now. But when you first listened to your first master, do you think you were listening harder than anything you've ever listened to in your life? Because it's your first record.
Mm-hmm.
You finally have it finished.
Mm-hmm.
There's not much more you're going to do to change it.
Mm-hmm.
Or did you just enjoy it? Like, you had to have been listening hard.
Yes, and I still gave feedback to Mark Shelicky, and I say, yeah, I'm not sure about that. Okay, I'll send you another balance in a second. Okay. Yes, because I'm never satisfied.
Right.
And because it's the first one, you're just like, oh, you know. So after that, you send the track to one of a friend, and the guy, yeah, but what do you think? Oh, yeah, it's good. Don't trip. Okay, cool. And you're just like, You're never sure, and that's the magic of the music.
Every artist,
you're never sure.
Every artist is the same,
and you always find stuff you're not happy. Oh man, that's not right. I should have done this. Oh, and still as today, I'm like, oh no, that's.
Well, it'll take you years. I've noticed this with my own records. It won't happen 6 months from now. It won't even happen a year from now. It'll happen 5 years from now, where the things that you are like, I wish I did this different, will disappear.
Yeah.
And then you'll just look at it like, oh, man, this was joyful. That's what you want to look at. Like, at the end of the day, you look back at your memories, musical or not, like, does this have pain or is it joyful?
Yeah.
And you're going to look at this and think this was joyful because the people that are on it, the music that you're playing, you wrote all this from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And it's slamming, dude. I'm telling you, I listen to so many records all the time. And what I love is you did a jazz record in a time when jazz – people aren't even aware of jazz the way they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you do need to keep making records, because players like you and the players that you play with, They have to be documented. It is the only way that it'll freeze time and freeze that musical ability for the world to catch up with, because that's what you're doing. You're basically showing this is what all this musical prowess has led me to document it, and then the world has to catch up. So, man, it is such a slamming record.
No, thank you
so
much.
I'm going to play another track, and we're going to talk more about this record and just plans and obstacles that you went through making this. Here's Missing You, Ludo Louis. What a beautiful song, man. Missing You. Tell us what that's about.
Oh, it's about my family. It's about my family. They allow me to live my dream to come to the U.S. And I wanted to do the job here. And they just, like, helped me out and pushed me to do it. And so I just, and sometimes it's difficult, that the distance and everything. France right. is not that close. So yes, I just wanted to write a song to tell them how much I love them, how much I'm grateful for them in my life. So that's why I wrote
Missy. That's amazing. Beautiful song.
Thank you.
I want to ask you a little bit about a random question. The Paris jazz scene.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like one of the coolest. Is it one of the coolest?
It is.
Is it like a small city within that? Because it's like Paris is a huge city.
Yeah.
But New York is like this, where mm-hmm. it's a giant city, but it's a small community that are playing these jazz clubs. Is it like that in Paris? Tell me what the music scene's like over there.
I like to go to my favorite club called Le Baiser Salé. It's like mostly influence is like Caribbean jazz.
Awesome.
But also like straight ahead or so funk. But I love that place because that's basically where I can see my friend when I go back there. And it's like, yeah, as you said, a community of friends and we know each other. We don't formally met, but I know right. who you are, and
right.
it's a nice community, and I really really dig it. But I feel it's the same, like if you feel like the same as New York,
it's a grind. It's always a grind.
And even here in LA, you can go to clubs just to hang,
right.
not to be especially go for playing, and
right.
just to hang and see the friends and see your friends playing and just like see people you haven't seen in ages, like you bumped into them. Oh man, you're here. Yeah, it's cool, you know. And that's the same in Paris. Sometimes you just go to club to see people and
you don't bring your horn. It's always close.
Yeah, you never know. Yeah.
No, you're lucky.
They're gonna call a song and be like, "Oh, I want to jam."
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. If you don't have your horns, it's just like, "Oh man,
that's slamming." You know what's so neat about what you're doing? It's like you're playing all over the place. You've toured all over the world. You live kind of in two amazing cities,
mm-hmm.
and you've created musical connections and a family in both cities as far as your musical family, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's two of the biggest cities in the world.
Mm.
Do you want another city like that? Do you want a New Orleans? Do you want a New York? Do you want another city in the world? London? Is there another city that
you want?
Yes,
I mean, there is two other cities I really love. It's New York and London. Because of diversity of people
yep.
and what everybody can bring to the table, like the influences or the roots and everything. So those two cities, beside of LA and Paris, are two of my favorite cities in the world. So
two of the hardest cities to play in, too. Let's be honest.
Yeah, man.
I played in New York. I played in London, and those are not easy cities to play in.
Nope. So I had the chance to jam in London, so it was pretty cool. But man,
wow.
It's hard.
Well, you know, it's funny. Coldplay just did a concert at the Apollo in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I played the Apollo in New York,
mm-hmm.
but the way I played the Apollo was the old school way, where you go and you play with the Apollo House Band, and they're playing their music to a crowd that loves them. I'm like, it's not the same. That's not the same venue that you just played, even though you know they're playing their music, but. You know, Paris has so many amazing eclectic music venues, London, New York, mm-hmm. L.A. Do you have a favorite city?
Favorite city?
For music. You don't have to say because your family, whatever, but
Ooh.
Music city. Because you've been all over. I mean, you've been mm-hmm. everywhere, all over the world. Is there a favorite city that you love to play in?
I would say L.A. and Paris. But, I mean...
That gave me chills, man. I'm in the right place now.
But another... Like another culture that I really love is Japan. Tokyo,
yeah.
Amazing. Amazing musicians, places, just, yeah. I really love the vibe over there. So,
well, the advantage of what you're doing, too, you could put bands in every city doing your music.
If I know people.
Yes. Well, you know enough in Paris and LA, you could do bi-coastal.
Yeah.
That
would be fun.
Slam it.
A fun idea, like LA to Paris, a band, but yeah, there's also there's like lots of French people around here too, and lots of Americans too in Paris. So yeah, maybe why not? But yeah, I love Tokyo. Tokyo is cool. Brazil too.
Yeah.
Brazil.
They got a lot of jazz.
Rio.
Oh yeah.
And Sao Paulo. That was really, really the music over there. You go in some bars and you get like amazing musician playing and just like, wow, slamming. So yeah. But if awesome. Really, really, I had to choose. Oh man, I can't. I can't choose
like
in Paris.
There's a fantasy in my mind that I would love to live in New Orleans because it is a music city and
Same.
There's so much music and horns and like there's a vibe and there's a sound and there's, you know, all this culture and, you know, but a shout out to Mike Ayi, our good mm-hmm. friend. You know, he used yeah. to tell me, he's like, man, I love that city, but it's like a small pond. It's like once you play with everybody that plays in that city, that's it. And mm-hmm. it's like that's what's great about LA. It's like a deeper kind of pond than mm-hmm. most cities. But there's something about that city in my mind. I'm like, man, it would just be great to just camp for like 3 months there and just play like crazy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a point. I just wanted to ask you because you played some of the biggest stadiums, jazz clubs all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the million-dollar question. Now that you've finished this record,
Besides
the touring and, you know, arranging for promo and all that stuff, when do you think you'll be ready to do another record?
That's
the million-dollar question.
Give me $1 million and I answer you.
Well, did you,
yeah,
did
no,
you feel like it was a beautiful experience at the end?
I want to do another one because I feel like it's just the beginning because I want to try different sound too and and because I've done that one. Already think about okay maybe the second one I was digging that those vibes, those sound, maybe that I should start writing in that direction or going somewhere else, but I want to do another one for sure.
Yeah.
And because making album is fun and we're lucky enough to do music for a living and be able to share with great musicians. And so, yes, I want to do more. I don't know when it's going to be the next one, but for sure I'm going to definitely do another one.
Well, you've left the world with something amazing with this record. We can't wait to hear more from it. We can't wait to have you back.
Thank you.
On behalf of Sam, myself, and Ludo, we'll see you guys next week. Ludo, you were the reason we came to the studio again.
Thanks for having me.
This is the first time both of us were lost coming in here. But, you know, it was great to see you in person. It was great to do this interview back in the studio, in our new studio. And, yeah, man, you have to keep us posted. Every record you do, every musical entity that you're a part of, we want to know about it. So we'll have to have you back, okay, man?
Thank you for having me, Ari. I appreciate that.
Of course,
Thank
of
you,
course. Man, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Check out Ludo's record. What's the name of the record? One more time.
Rebirth.
Oh, it's the first song I played, man. That was perfect. All right, check out. And where can people find you? Real quick.
Oh, you can find me on Instagram, Ludovic Louis Music.
Spell it out. Ludovic Louis
Music. That's for Instagram. You can find me also on Facebook, Ludovic Louis. My website, www.ludovicLouis.com. And Spotify. Apple
all
Music,
socials,
all
yep.
the socials. Yeah, you can Deezer, all of those you can find me.
Stream is music, but you know what? You should buy the music. Buy the music because you know what? Albums like this don't come around all the time. Buy his music. If you need to stream it too because he'll get paid slower that way. But you know what? At least you're listening to it. But Ludo, you made a great record. I really, really love the record and hope you make many more. And we'll see you guys all here next week. Thanks for tuning in. And yeah. Take care of each other. Be good to yourselves. Be good to one another.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence right here on LA Talk Radio.